After the wedding of Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez in Las Vegas in a tiny little chapel, you got to wonder if that kind of thing where the stars get married in Vegas, if that's coming back. I mean, they've got millions. Why get married for a C-note on Las Vegas Boulevard? That's just one of the interesting stories from the entertainment capital of the world in recent weeks. And John Katsalamidis, entertainment columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, is with us for that and more. John, welcome to you and your singing voice back.
Hello. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. So I want to start with that wedding, some 20 years in the making. Bennifer, a.k.a. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, tied the knot, the little wedding, little white wedding chapel in Vegas. And I know there are people saying, who cares about a celebrity wedding? Explain to them why this is kind of a big deal to fans, but also to Las Vegas.
You know, yeah, it is. It's I say it's to enhance the couple's mystique. You know, over the tradition in Las Vegas is for generations has been for movie stars, especially, and famous people generally, to get married in Vegas. Do a quickie Vegas wedding. You know, we've all seen that happen. And a little white chapel where they got married is, you know, Paul Woodward, Joanne Woodward were married there for example. Many movie stars, many famous athletes, Michael Jordan was married there. Charlotte Richards founded the place. It's been open since 1951. It's a famous Las Vegas chapel. And I think, you know, what better way to throw your fans a little bit of a knuckleball in a kind of a kitschy way with a sense of humor, and owing to both Hollywood and Las Vegas tradition, than to do the kind of thing they did. I thought it was really cool. I loved it.
Yeah. And I also think about the wedding industry in Vegas, and more on the newsier, the hard news side, which has suffered in recent years. Does this kind of thing, does it bolster, you know, the image of Vegas for people thinking about, yeah, let's do what Bennifer did?
Yeah, that's a concerted effort. You're right, Joe. We've returned in a messaging campaign with our resorts officials to remind people of the history of Las Vegas weddings. It's the wedding capital of the world, as long as the entertainment capital of the world. And they've been going through that. We had our, I think it was the 1,000,000th or 5,000,000th wedding license issued earlier this year. They made a big deal out of that. I'm in contact with Lynn Goya, who's the clerk who oversees the wedding division, a lot about these, about wedding issues and landmarks. The first call out when I heard about Bennifer was to Lynn, you know, to talk to her about what this meant as part of that campaign. It's a big industry. It's a big, it's a big civic message. And a branding component to Las Vegas. And also in the face of this whole thing, we just got through reporting about a lot of downtown Las Vegas wedding issues with Elvis Presley's licensing company that was cracking down on these little chapels. And they had to, you know, enter into deals to allow the image and likeness and name of Elvis Presley to be used at all in some of these, because they do so many themed weddings too. So that was, you know, that has been happening ever since like Memorial Day. So there's been a lot of wedding news, you know, in Las Vegas, and this is just the latest example. But I thought it was great. I thought it was more effective for them to get married at a little white chapel or a place like that than to go out to a place like Venetian or Bellagio and do it there. You know, that was kind of
what do you mean effective? I mean, why do it? Like I said, they have millions of dollars. They could hold, you know, the biggest party in the world wherever they want. Why?
I think it's easier for starters. You can do it on the fly, like they apparently did, and it's, I think it generates more interest when
do
you
those
do
weddings
it.
Last.
Do, well, a lot of them have lasted 50 years. A lot of them have lasted 55 hours, as we've come to know. Britney Spears and Jason Alexander got married at Little White Chapel also. So I took the under on that one. But I think it is a way to get yourself out there in a different kind of way and to generate you know, free entertainment media, mass media, and also do something that was simply fun. They stood in line with other couples.
Yeah, and that was kind of cool.
And they got in, you know, barely had to make a call and have the chapel stay open for about a half hour longer because it was due to close at midnight. They wanted to get an Elvis guy, apparently. And they couldn't find one. And I'm like, bummer for the Elvis tribute artist who couldn't answer the bell to marry Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez at Little White Chapel. But they were married effectively.
Loss. Yeah. Oh, right. That could have been huge.
I'm thinking of my buddy Jesse Guerin, for example. Yeah, he does a lot of those. Uh-huh. And I called him. I haven't heard back from him. But I'd be like, if you slept that one off, man, you missed out.
Oh, man. By the way, is this where Elvis had gotten married? The real Elvis?
No, he got married at the Aladdin.
Oh, the Aladdin.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and in 67.
Who else has been married in Vegas of fame?
Oh, God, Michael Caine. We mentioned Jordan. We've mentioned, we've had any number of them. I have to even go look at the list to get you the really good list. But we have had Frank Sinatra, Mia Farrow, Bruce Willis, and Demi Moore. Paul Newman and John Woodward at that very chapel that we're mentioning. So it's been a tradition since the 50s for celebrities to get. Michael Caine's marriage was here in 72 at a little chapel of the West on the south side mm-hmm. of the boulevard. He's talked about that. Anne Margaret, Roger Smith got married here. Kirk Douglas was married here. Francis Ford Coppola and his wife were married here. All in Las Vegas.
And of course, you mentioned Britney Spears as well.
Yes.
You know, speaking of celebrity.
The first one.
Speaking of.
The second one, I guess it was.
Celebrity weddings. Vegas Golden Knights forward William Karlsson, who has made fans' hearts swoon for 5 years now. He's about to get married to reality star Emily Ferguson. Some Karlsson fans are going to be sad about that, of course. Those two have been dating for years, though. Is their wedding much of a deal beyond Vegas? Does it even come close to Bennifer?
I think it's I think in Las Vegas he's well known, and he's one of the original Misfits, Karlsson, mm-hmm. The expansion team that went to the Stanley Cup final in their first year. I don't think so. I think that it's big in Las Vegas, but the NHL itself is not the biggest pro sports league. Anyway, the NFL is.
Right.
So that if it were a member of a star from the Raiders, for example, it'd probably be a little bit bigger deal nationally. So the short answer there is just because it's a little bit more of a niche interest in Karlsson than it would be in some of their more famous athletes.
Is it niche or niche?
Niche. Oh, niche. Okay. Okay. Niche. Mine was quiche. It's a little bit of a quiche market.
Well, I was kind of wondered that.
Yeah. We'll look it up during break if we have one.
I'm here with John Katzlamitis, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We're talking about, there's really a lot happening in the entertainment world, from the wedding of Bennifer to the Meatloaf musical and a lot more. And I want to get to the Meatloaf musical. But, John, first I want to talk about maybe the biggest star in the world, Adele. Her sold-out show was supposed to kick off at the Coliseum in January around then, but then she canceled the entire 8-week residency the day before the show. She blamed COVID, delays. She also said the show wasn't ready. A few weeks ago, she told the BBC that money wasn't the issue. She said something like, "You can't buy me." Where are things now with her show?
Okay. She has, as everybody who has been following this knows, she canceled the night before her opening night, which was to be January 21st. They were supposed to run 24 total weekends through the summer. They were able to fill some dates. They weren't able to fill other dates. But they were holding dates at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace in November for her and December for her possible and expected return. That is happening, to my best information. I think that they're going to announce that she's going to be coming back to the Coliseum in beginning in November. And I think that she's going to do 24 shows in Las Vegas, November, December, and probably break. And they're going to add shows. It's going to be more than 24. I think that there will be between 5 and 10 shows added to her run. That's what I've sitting here right now. I believe that, and I think it will be announced next week. Now, the big asterisk in this whole thing, for those of us who've had the unique experience of following Adele's plans, is nothing happens until her team approves it. This is not up to Live Nation at the end. It's not up to Caesars Entertainment. It's not up to Ticketmaster or anybody else. It's Adele and her team, and the process is you present options to her and you wait for her to approve or change or wait.
Is that how it works with everybody?
I think, it is. It's more pronounced this way because there's so much pressure on this residency. The artist eventually and his or her team.
Why is there so much more pressure on this?
Because of what happened. She canceled a sold-out run of 24 shows the night before opening and hasn't specified the return date yet. And here we are in July, 6 months later. And that is that's a concern for people who are trying to build the show. They had to lay off the crew at the Colosseum at Caesar's Palace over the summer because there was no ability to book a show in the Colosseum during the summer months because they were waiting for her. So now there's about a dozen union stagehands that have basically been furloughed until September when they restart the room. I think it's Van Morrison and Rod Stewart are the next acts coming into the Colosseum. So there's that, you know, and there's a, there's the added pressure on from the fans who are holding tickets. I understand between 80 and 90% of the fans who bought Adele tickets did not ask for refunds. They're holding
wow.
them. So you have to accommodate that massive amount, thousands and thousands of people, and go back to now putting them on sale, I guess, in August for more shows. You put all that together, and there's and there is just the pressure of – what are we doing? You know, are we organized here? What are we doing? We, you know, we signed this superstar. It was a very hyped residency for many years. Every couple years, I'd go through an Adele rumor. She's going to the Encore. She's going to Venetian. And it never turned out to be true. This one was true. At the Resorts World was another one. People were out there were convinced Adele was going to go to Resorts World. The fact that it was so long coming, so hyped, and cut so quickly before the premiere has added a lot of emphasis and tension on this. And I think the best thing for Adele to do is to really get out in front and say, okay, we're going to do this show.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your patience, and we're going to rock it but, and be ready for it.
But does it matter? She's such a megastar. Is she somebody that somebody in the casino industry would eventually say, oh, forget it, we're tired of working with you, or she's just so big, she can do whatever she wants?
Well, you're kind of all in with her now. You know, that question is before you sign her. I think you can make the argument if you're in negotiations and you're competing with someone and saying, you know what, we have a theater full of superstars already. You go, good luck to you, and you sign her up. But once you sign her, you either see it to the end, you see it to the end one way or the other. I've been asked a lot of times, like, why isn't there, a lot of it is, why isn't there more outcry in Las Vegas and criticism of Adele? And I'm saying, you know what? The answers to that are people like Usher, Silk Sonic with Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak, John Legend, Sting, the resident headliners who are already here. We're paying a lot of attention to those who are already booked, Katy Perry, Luke Bryan, Carrie Underwood, Lady Gaga, who are already here and performing and doing what they're supposed to do. You know, Adele, we hope, work it out or not, and let us know. But, you know, I'm personally interested in covering the shows that are going on.
That's a little frustration in you.
It is frustrating because, you know, we've been dealing with this, and I'm feeling about the fans and the entertainment professionals and the executives who have had to ride this out, you know. I think I'm feeling the same kind of frustration that they are because every day, you know, there's a report. It seems one thing about Adele, it seems like she talks more about Las Vegas when she's far away from Las Vegas than she is when she's close to Las Vegas, when she's in L.A. She goes to London and she talks all about, you know, what she wants to do in Las Vegas. It's only, you know, when she comes back here, you can't get, you know, any updates out of them. I'm eager to see the my colleagues at Live Nation and Caesars Entertainment, that their hard work is rewarded. I'm eager to see that the people who have showed faith in her and bought tickets and gone through the whole verified ticket program through Ticketmaster, which is requires a lot of patience, that they're finally rewarded with this show. And I hope that Adele puts the show together that she's comfortable with, finally, which doesn't involve a Cirque du Soleil on steroids, apparently. Amen to that.
Is it safe to say she's the first coming, or is she the second coming of Elvis, or is she bigger than BTS?
She might be the... I don't know if anybody's bigger than BTS, really. Seriously, after they sold out, when they sold out six or four shows at Allegiant Stadium. That's... I would like to see somebody else do that. I think that she maybe is, I don't know, second. She might be the third coming. You've had the Elvis era and that, and then you had Celine Dion come in and create this template that we have now. And then you have Adele as part of that. But I think we have other artists who are selling out routinely or almost selling out routinely. just as well as Adele has. They've done comparable business. So I don't know if she's in, I don't know that she's going to break ground in terms of business necessarily with whatever 30 shows, but she's definitely a brass ring resident. There's no question about it. There's everybody wanted Adele, and they knew that she would rock the box office, and she has. I expect that she will be great musically too. The TV special stuff she's done, and the footage I've seen from Hyde Park this month in London was very impressive.
You're not so bad yourself. Maybe she'll bring you up on stage. listeners, hold on. You will find out.
Adele, if you're listening, I can sing half of Rolling in the Deep.
Adele, if you're listening, what?
I can sing half of
Rolling. Oh, there you go. Okay.
Or anything off 30.
Well, maybe we've exhausted our Adele discussion, and maybe we won't have anything to talk about until she does the residency in a couple of months.
I hope she announces next week, and we can move off the speculation and talk about actual dates.
I want to talk about Bat Out of Hell.
Okay.
Now, that is a musical residency coming to Vegas this fall, named after Meatloaf's album. It's going to be at Paris, or the Paris, as my former mother-in-law from Buffalo used to call it.
It's the same place.
The hotel's website says the musical is a Rocky Horror Romeo and Juliet celebration of star-crossed lovers from opposite sides of the tracks, caught in a city teetering on the brink of disaster. There's a lot there. Can you break it down?
Well, this is a musical that has yet to play anywhere in North America. And then it's been announced to open in September at Paris Theater, and it is an adaptation of Meatloaf's "Bat Out of Hell" album, as written by Jim Steadman, who's done all of his the writing of the music in the album and also in the musical. This is going to be a residency show. It's going to run, you know, 5 nights a week. And it's coming into a theater that has been very star-crossed over the years. This was the last venue that Jersey Boys performed in. It hasn't had a show since I Love the 90s closed in December of 2018. It had Circus 1903 didn't work. It had Inferno didn't work. It had Marilyn, a new musical, didn't work. But I can tell you that it is going after Las Vegas entertainers, this show. It has auditioned here, and to the producers, great, I would say, I don't know if it was a surprise, but appreciation, they found a way to populate the cast with Vegas performers, beginning with the lead role is Travis Clower. Now, Las Vegas fans, and especially fans of the musical Jersey Boys, know all about Travis Clower. He's a great musical theater performer. He's a great he has a great one-man show. I saw it a couple weeks ago at Myron's at the Smith Center, and Travis is going to be very important because he's well known in Vegas. He played Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys more than anybody ever, and he still lives here. When Jersey Boys closed at Paris, I think it was September of 2016, Travis decided to stay. And Jen, his wife, who's a former showgirl who I met when she was in Peep Show at Planet Hollywood, they decided to keep their family here and stick it out. And so Travis has been performing all over town and auditioned for Bat Out of Hell and won the lead. Now, and another Las Vegas favorite who's in the cast is Ann Martinez, and she was in Baz, the musical over at Palazzo Theater, the Baz Luhrmann based musical, when it closed 3 years ago. So I will tell you that this is going to be, I feel, the a lot like Mamma Mia, this musical. Now, I haven't seen a treatment of it at all, but it feels like the kind of show where you don't necessarily need to be a big Meatloaf fan. You don't have to have had Bat Out of Hell on vinyl or been, you know, followed him on tour or even seen him in Las Vegas. But you will be captured by the storyline and how the music is used in the show and become a fan of the show. Like, you know, a lot of people who maybe weren't ABBA fans got into Mamma Mia because it was so cleverly executed. They always had a talented cast. This show is following, intentionally or otherwise, that path. Hmm. And it's in a very interesting location. That theater has not been able to sustain a show very well. Even Barry Manilow was there for a couple years too in Paris Theater.
Maybe the ghost of Meatloaf, who unfortunately died mm-hmm. earlier this year, will descend upon said theater and bring it good luck.
Well, he saw it and he liked it. And Meatloaf, it's interesting. Meatloaf did three series here in Las Vegas at Planet Hollywood in Adam Sex's Rocktails and Cocktails series. The first one did great. Ran in the black, wonderful performance. Second one broke about even. Third one got killed. So I don't know if there's a lesson there somewhere.
But. Well, I, you know, after he passed away early this year, I remember watching the videos of his songs from the 80s. He was amazing to watch.
He was he had a lot of musical theater in him. It was like watching a Broadway rock. And Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Some of these songs are 10 minutes long.
I want to get to that. I'd Do Anything for Love is about 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And think about this show. It's on the Strip. This is where Phantom of the Opera was shortened to a Strip-friendly 96 minutes years ago from 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Do you think they'll do those songs at that length?
You know, I don't know if they'll run a 10-minute single number out of it. I don't know. That's a good question. I think it will be the same type of format that all the other shows, like Jersey Boys, ran about 90 minutes, but and it had an 8-minute break, a mini intermission. It might do something like that, but I don't see them. I don't know how you can run a 10-minute song inside. You know, that's a good piece of your storytelling, and when you're trying to move a story along in a Romeo and Juliet.
But the reason I think it might work is if you watch the video, it works. I could watch that entire video for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting. I mean, he was such a great – he was so emotive and so into it.
That's going to be Clower. That's the actor's charge. I don't know. They might split the songs. You know, they might come back to him. Mm-hmm. You know, you might see pieces of I Will Do Anything for Love interspersed. You know, I don't know. They have a lot of they have all the autonomy to do whatever they want to with the music because they own the licensing of it, of course. I don't know. We'll see how it plays. There's a number of ways you can use this material, but the source material is unique in the hard rock culture because it does naturally lend itself to kind of a musical theater adaptation, you know. And Travis, when I was talking to Clower about this, he says he's so used to doing that kind of doo-wop, you know, early 60s rock and roll kind of stylings. This is a whole different way of presenting music, but it should be very satisfying. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the source material is so rich, and the talent is so great that it's going to be a fun show.
You know, John, fortunately, you've taken singing lessons. You've talked about numerous times on this program. We're going to go into a break and come back with you.
You've talked about it.
I wonder if you could start a rendition of "I'd Do Anything for Love," which I'm sure you would in real life. And we'll get into our break, and we'll come back with you in a few minutes.
I will do anything for love, but I won't do.
From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. I'm here with John Katsalamidis. He is the entertainment columnist and writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal. We're talking about what else in the entertainment capital of the world, entertainment, and he covers it assiduously. John, we've been talking about the wedding of Bennifer, the Meatloaf musical. I want to get into something. Adam Lambert. He's a singer-songwriter. In October, he's going to perform at the Encore Theater. His show is being called The Witch Hunt. This is a three-show limited engagement celebrating Halloween. I don't think I've ever heard of a show like this. Have you?
A themed show specific to the Strip is unique. I don't know if I've never seen it, but he is certainly the guy to do it. You know, Adam Lambert, if you remember, he finished second to Chris Allen some years ago in 2009 on American Idol. And he's one of those guys, as I've written, it's like, how did that guy not win American Idol? But he's got also, you know, musical theater and even cruise ship history. My friend Anita Mann, who is the producer of Fantasy, has worked with him way early in his career. And a lot of entertainers in Las Vegas have known him over the development. He started at a very young age. He is very glam. He is very theatrical, super theatrical. And he can, I would say Adam Lambert could take any number of themes and turn over three shows. This happens to be pegged to the Halloween season. So he wants it to be that. So he wants people to dress up, get into it that way and be part of it.
Do you have any idea what it's about? Like, what is it?
You know, other than what they've announced, I don't know, because it's specific to Las Vegas. It's custom for Las Vegas what he's doing, but he's gonna perform in costume and have a witching hour and a Halloween theme through and have people it'd be a big costume party. That's what he's asking for.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, bring glitter. That's what I say, folks. A lot of glam, a lot of splat.
Bring glitter and throw it everywhere so that people have to clean it up everywhere.
Yeah, that theater crew is going to rue the day they signed Adam Lambert. But it's going to be a lot of that. It's going to be, you know, and I'll tell you, it sounds a lot like the residency that Robbie Williams brought in. He had his theme was just like classic Vegas, you know, and he came over from Britain and he was in the band Take That, and he's huge in Britain. And I was wondering what he was going to bring. And he did a whole, you know, kind of fanciful tribute to Las Vegas in his show, where he had, you know, all the classic kind of cliches of Vegas on stage, and people got into it that way. Lambert's show feels like it might be closer to that than anything I've seen overall.
Yeah, I want to talk about a club, which we don't talk about clubs a lot on here, but the Ghost Bar is returning to the Palms Resort Casino. It was shut down during COVID, mm-hmm. remained closed during the sale of the Palms. You've been to a lot of these night spots, I'm assuming, but mm-hmm. I think you cover everything. It's almost like you have 20 lives. So you cover so much.
That's the 18th, the club life.
talk about the Ghost Bar pre-pandemic. Why is it so popular? And I guess I wonder this because so often we see casinos, you know, they'll have a club for maybe a few months. If it's not perfect, they'll close it and put up something else.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, Ghost Bar is unique primarily because of its view and its location on the 55th floor of the Palms. It has indoor-outdoor seating, indoor-outdoor capacities, and you look out, you're facing the east toward the Strip, but you're not on the Strip, so you get the entire view of the Strip way upstairs. And it has had a little bit of a quasi-exclusive air to it. There's a private elevator that goes up there. It used to go up from Nine Steakhouse. It will now go up from the Scotch 80 restaurant, which is in the Nine space. So if you know who to talk to, you can get the private elevator, you know, during dinner and go up to Ghost Bar. It's mostly about the view. Cindy Kaiser Murphy, the GM of the hotel, and I talked to her about this over the weekend, said they're trying to leverage the view, you know, because you have something that's so obviously unique. So make that the thing and make sure people know about it. I said recently, and I've said throughout Ghost Bar, if you were to put that club on the ground level, you know, off the entrance of the Palms, it would have been renovated two or three times already. Probably be the high limit room by now. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it would be something else, sir. It would not be in its current design because it's not really, it's a pretty place, but it's not about that club design. It's about the location of the club on the roof. So they're going to reopen this on August 3rd. They promised that they would reopen it. They reopened it under its original name, which I thought was very smart. They're not getting too cute over there at the Palms. They know mm-hmm. what works and they're going to mm-hmm. emphasize it. Really important. If you're reopening a hotel casino, folks, don't overthink things. Ghost Bar is Ghost Bar, and they're going to bring in a really popular show woman as their lead entertainer in that place, Sky D. Miles, who every time I bring somebody into Las Vegas and they see Sky D. Miles, they turn to me and ask why this woman is not a superstar. She's incredible, and she's going to be performing what's called Midnight Sky. A late night show that is going to run, I think it's 10 to 2 a.m., 10 p.m., 2 a.m. when it opens on weekends. And that is going to draw a lot of locals. That's going to draw a lot of local entertainers, a lot of locals who are scenesters. A lot of people who might not want to go into the club anyway will want to go see Sky. And they're going to have a ghost spirit, I think they call it, cocktail program, which is spirits you can't find anywhere else that have been ghosted, but we have them, you know, here at Ghost mm-hmm. Bar. Cindy was saying that they want to own October. There's another mm-hmm. Halloween thing that they're going after. They want to own that month. They want to make that. They're opening in August, but I think their real push is going to be in October because the weather will be a little bit more friendly out there. The word ghost is in the title, so you might as well play off that and make it work that way. So I like what they've done over there at the Palms. You know, yeah. They have they're very intelligent about Las Vegas. They're very experienced about Las Vegas, and the ownership, the San Manuel tribe, likes hospitality. They love live entertainment. And I'll tell you one thing, too, about that. That place is clean. It's really clean over there at the Palms. I mean, it's spotless. And they've taken an existing property.
You've been to a million casinos. They all seem clean to me, at least compared to my house. What do you mean it's spotless?
I just think it just feels like it's been refreshed like that day. You know, some of them are clean, but have looked like they've been chewed up a little bit. but I'm in too many casinos to be deemed healthy anyway. But I'm struck by the cleanliness.
Let's move on. This is kind of strange news. I'm surprised that the Academy of Country Music Awards is leaving Las Vegas and they're moving to a place called Frisco, Texas. Frisco, Texas? I always thought Frisco was some kind of slang for San Francisco.
It's the bad slang for San Francisco. I wrote that headline in, and one of my editors said, first I thought you were talking about San Francisco, and I'm from Northern California.
Does anybody even know what or where Frisco,
Texas? Okay, it's part of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and it in the 2010s, I think I have this right, it's one of the fastest growing regions in the country, if not the fastest, Frisco, Texas. More than 200,000 people, Frisco. It's about 25 miles from Dallas Airport, And the facility that they're in is the training facility for the Dallas Cowboys. 12,000 people can fit in this thing. It's where the Cowboys work out. So here we have Jerry Jones, who's in charge of cowboys in helmets, going after cowboys in hats.
And
what they've done, I think this is a partnership overall with the Academy of Country Music, which just moved to Amazon Prime last year for the show at Allegiant Stadium. It's on that streaming platform exclusively. First time an award show's done that. I think Jerry Jones is going to take the ACMs and this is just the first example of what he plans to do. I wouldn't be surprised to see him pull that into the Cowboys Stadium and perform it there. They did that for the 50th anniversary, and George Strait hosted it a few years ago. The ACMs have been a Las Vegas tradition since 2003, except for the 2 years during pandemic and the 50th anniversary show in Dallas. Otherwise, it's been here. It's an important move because it shows that the civic leaders in Dallas will come
after
what
we have. This is a major loss for us.
You know, I think it's more of a – I think we'll be fine. The city will not be brought to its knees because the ACMs are in Dallas. But it is an example. We got to be careful about protecting what we have here. You know, the PBR has already left Las Vegas, the Professional Bull mm-hmm. Riders event, which is very popular. That leads me – we have talked about this for years, too, about the National Finals Rodeo, which is huge in Vegas, as you know, in December. Once its contract is over in four more years, four after this year, it'll be open season on the NFR. And if we remember what happened last time, we had the contract up. Osceola, Florida was coming after. Osceola County and Orlando, Florida were coming after. There's rumors that Dallas wanted it then. So we have to just be mindful that just because we have traditional events here that have been on national TV or national streaming platforms and in the Raiders' home stadium last year, doesn't mean they're going to be committed here just because they like us.
Yeah, I'm thinking about people who listen to country music. Obviously, it is mega country, mm-hmm. country western music. But if you're from some small backwater place in South Texas, do you want to go to Texas or do you want to come to Las Vegas? I mean, I went on Google, I looked at Frisco. There's one picture they have on there, and it looks about as exciting as a 19th century school marm. Mm-hmm. They're like three-story buildings, brick buildings. I mean, that's it.
Maybe that school marm is going to be Adam Lambert's next themed residency. That is the argument you make if you're a Las Vegas events or Las Vegas Conventioners and Visitors Authority here in Las Vegas. Because I've done – I went to the Cowboys Stadium when it first opened, and the first event they had there happened to be a Manny Pacquiao, a Joshua Claudy fight, and they were going to make a push for major fights and cut into Las Vegas business there. It became apparent immediately when I got there that there was nothing else to do but the fight and go back to your hotel at the Grapevine in Arlington and hang out at the I think it was a Starbucks or whatever it was. So
yeah, that'd be
right,
fun.
Right. This is a studio audience to me, what's going on in Frisco, but it's an effective studio audience because you can, you know, if you can live stream it, it that's what you're after. That's why you have the event there. There's no comparison to having the show at T-Mobile Arena. It's been there too, or MGM Grand Garden, and having all those facilities around you. They did a thing where Florida Georgia Line was on the show 1 year at the MGM Grand, and they took them from the arena live and drove them to the Orleans, and they did a number from the Orleans arena. During the show, they shut down Tropicana to get to the Orleans. It was wild, and it was really a race with the devil, man, because you don't know what you're going to run into. And when you're taking, they'd done a dry run of it. But you know, we have the ability to throw it to Fremont Street Experience, any number of places on the Strip. You know, you can broadcast a thing like the ACMs or any other award show that way. But you know, they have a broadcast and streaming deal that they've arranged elsewhere, and that money and that deal is going to win out. You know, we have the Grammys are going back to LA in February too. By the way, you know, they did 1 year here,
so maybe money wins out over fun.
You have to be able to market the fun in a way that turns a profit.
They've been doing that here for decades.
Yeah, we got to keep doing that, I would say.
I'm here with John Katzlamidis, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We're talking about a lot of really interesting stuff. We're going to be coming back. The Mob Museum there's a big change happening there. John's coolest spots list, the Beverly and the Heartland Mansion, and so much more. This is State of Nevada. From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman at State of Nevada. I'm here with John Katzlamidis, columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And in his many, many lives, he covers everything having to do with entertainment in Las Vegas. He's everywhere all the time. You read his column in the Las Vegas Review-Journal. It's remarkable how much stuff you go to, John. I want to move off the Strip for a second and talk about downtown Las Vegas. The Mob Museum is expanding. The nonprofit has announced the purchase of a 30,000 square foot parcel just east of its main building. What's going there?
Well, that's a good question. They are saying it's space for additional administrative facilities, exhibitions, archives, educational and entertainment programs, food and beverage facilities. Specifically, I don't know. I think there will be more display space. There might be an entertainment component to this, offices that won't infringe on or take away from the main building. That's their point of emphasis. But they are going to expand and give you more of a Mob Museum opportunity in this new parcel. Other than that, it's to be determined. But it is impressive because the Mob Museum opened 10 years ago. And there was a lot of skepticism about.
Oh my gosh! People were up in arms. Oscar Goodman pushed hard for it. People were like, "What are we spending this money for?"
It was a lift. Yeah, it was a lift. It was a significant argument.
And it's so successful now.
Yeah. Well, it draws I think the number was 400,000 a year in its peak before COVID. Mostly tourists. Primarily, 85 to 90% tourists, and it was a long throw, but the way they executed it and getting the getting FBI officials to come in and be part of the law enforcement messaging in there was very important. They've always said that this is even though it's called the Mob Museum, this is mostly a story about the pursuit of these nefarious characters and how law enforcement was able to undercut organized crime in the end. You know, and through that journey, you learn a lot about mobsters, and that's the draw. You know, I don't know if anybody goes in there to see learn about more about the FBI necessarily, but they do go in there and they want to learn about Lefty Rosenthal and Tony Spilotro and those figures.
Nefarious underworld
types. Nefarious bad guys. Yeah. But anyway, that's I'm impressed that the Mob Museum has made it to this point where they can expand after a decade.
Too.
You know, I mean, we were there.
I'm stunned
at the opening of this, in the pre-opening of it. We're like, this is looking very self-destructive for our city.
Nobody thought it was going to work.
I remember the lines. You know, I remember it's like, what's next? The prostitution museum, and
the illegal drugs. The illegal drug ancillary hub.
Let's just go all in with this. And it's not too late to go there, I guess. But I was there was another one. There was a second mob experience that opened at that time, too. Those of us who were around in those days at the Tropicana that was opening at the same time, the Mob Museum. So not only did the Mob Museum have to struggle with its own ideology downtown, we had another one on the Strip that was coming in and wanted to be the one. And, you know, through the whole thing, they outlasted that one. That one,
there shall
you
be
know,
only
fell
one.
Apart. And yeah, they're here today. So I like it. It's a really good. I love sending people to the Mob Museum. They've got a really good thing going on downstairs. That Hideaway speakeasy at the Underground is very cool. And yeah, it is very Vegas, and it does so without being terrifically insulting. And it's very interesting. You know.
Let's move on here, John. Earlier this month, you published a list of some of the city's coolest spots, and I want to talk about some of your picks. The first is a place called the Coral Lounge. It's at the Mayfair Supper Club at the Bellagio. First off, though, I want to talk about a supper club. Supper clubs were like a big to-do with my mom when she like put on a different wig and go out, and I could never go, so I always thought it was some adult-themed things happening here. But what's a supper club?
It's an experience where you're having a meal, and there's an entertainment, there's live entertainment happening concurrently. Or as part of your experience. So Mayfair is a supper club at the Bellagio, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a stage show, and they've just revamped the stage show, but they have a show that's got a theme to it, and they do kind of they've had a Gatsby theme to it in the past. Delilah's another one over at Wynn Las Vegas. And you go in, and it's like a portal into a movie set in a lot of ways. Cool. And you go in there, and you got some top talent, and people are up there doing songs and music, musical numbers, and dancing intermittently. You have kind of a refined dining experience, a place like Mayfair. Mm-hmm. And that's your supper club time. So you spend a couple hours enjoying a multifaceted hospitality experience. The Coral Lounge is just opened in front of the Mayfair at the entrance. There's a bar out front. It was kind of just where you just hang before you'd either go in there and just to hang or you wait for your table there. They've taken advantage of that space and are moving some artists in there and to do music. And a lot of these, in fact, exclusively, I would say, they're Las Vegas small capacity lounge club performers who are super talented, but not real well known. Tamara Walker.
Those are rarities these days.
Well, you know what it is? Cool Hang Alert, has been something I've been doing for years in my column. And it used to start just once in a while. I just toss in a note about, okay, here's a cool hang. I like calling them a cool hang. Is it a cool hang? It's a thing we talk about.
I can coin that. That's going to be on the Urban Dictionary pretty soon.
It is. I'm making that effort now. It's going to have its own Wikipedia page.
You made it up. It's great.
The TikTok. It's going to be on the TikTok, folks. And so my question has always been, is it a cool hang or not? And they say, yeah, it's a hang. It's a thing. That's how we talk. So I started using cool hang in the column. And then all of a sudden, people started wanting to be in the cool hang alert. Say, hey, I've got a cool hang alert here, wherever it is. So now I've really got my radar up. People are coming in. And the Coral Lounge is a cool hang, and it's an alert about the cool hang. So I do everything from that place to Rhythm and Riffs at Mandalay Bay. The Italian American Club is loaded with cool hangs. The Bootlegger Bistro, Cool Hang Central. The Nevada Room at Commercial Center. Saddle and Spurs out there in North Vegas has a lot of cool hangs with the country music and line dancing out there. Everything, it's usually what it is. It's something that is a low cover or no cover that you can just walk into. It's been expanded, but Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns, David Perico, Lon Bronson's All-Star Band started as Cool Hangs, Cool Hang Alert. Frankie Marino was an original Cool Hang Alert at the Palms in the old days. He's now in residency at Chaos beginning next weekend at the Palms. So that's what it is. And we started breaking out. Finally, we tapped into that and broke out an entire column entry that is updated every day with the latest Cool Hang. So you can dig deep in there and you can find the Cool Hang Alert from all over the place. Cork and Thorn in the Arts District is in there. Yeah. We've had some comedy in there that they're doing free comedy.
Get that on the TikTok.
Get it on the TikToks.
Yeah, kids. Get it on the TikToks.
The kids are all about the TikToks
now,
these days.
You've also talked about something called Soul Juice at Santa Fe. What's Soul Juice? What kind of music?
Well,
Soul?
It's a big brassy band headed up by David Tatlock. They're out at the Chrome showroom at Santa Fe Station. Station Casino is one of these places that really pays a lot of attention to locals. And the Chrome showroom out of Santa Fe, David Perico's been out there. I think they've done the Wind Jammers, which is a yacht rock band fronted by Jerry Lopez of Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. Very popular. It's a very popular place. Soul Juice Band is David Tatlock, and it is just a rock, funk, powerhouse awesome. Experience. It really great. This is in line. There's a lot of these kinds of bands in Las Vegas that have traditionally, they go back to Lon Bronson's All Star Band and back to Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. And David's band is like that. You just walk in and David's all over the stage and they just play a lot. It's like Tower Power mm-hmm. vibe, and no cover. And you go in there and it's another one. You're like, well, hello. How are these guys, you know, not on tour nationally?
Yeah.
And David is a fantastic guy, fantastic artist, and deserves more. I always say I wish I could do more for all these acts. But that's what Soul Juice Band is. So they just released a single, and they're out there. They kick around quite a bit. I've seen them at Notoriety.
God, do you ever sleep?
I'm asleep now.
So you did a column as well on something that's going to happen later this year called the Beverly, and this is going to be, I think, something entirely different. For one, it's downtown, but it's not on Fremont Street.
Right.
What is it? Who's doing it?
The Beverly is the product of Beverly Rogers of the Rogers Foundation, and she was the widow of Jim Rogers of Sunbelt Communications, and who was a media magnate in Las Vegas who's done a lot of, who did a lot of charitable work, Mr. Rogers, and he's originally tied into Pocatello, Idaho, oddly enough, where I am originally from. We had known the Rogers family there. He had the interest in Las Vegas and in Arizona, and had donated so much money to the University of Arizona that he has the law school named for him there. And did donate a lot over the course of his life. And he was very much into arts and education and film. He was a big film buff, Jim. Beverly has taken that lead and created the foundation and is building out next to the Lucy and the Writer's Block on 6th Street downtown, and taken over the space next to it. And they're building the Beverly, which is going to be a theater that's going to be specializing in live music, film, and literature primarily, with some other components to it. They're going to have a little jazz club on the terrace. And if you have if you're a Las Vegas filmmaker and want to showcase a film, Beverly, you would contact them. If you have if you're a good, you know, kind of smaller scale touring act, you can play the Beverly. You know, if you want to do a reading, a poetry reading, a book signing, that kind of thing, you can do it at the Beverly as well. So this is coming online at the end of the year. I think a soft opening in December, and then they'll do a bigger opening in January. But it's being constructed right now, a two-story building.
You know what that sounds like? Very familiar, very similar to what Tony Shea had built at the corner of Fremont Las Vegas Boulevard several years ago.
Inspire. It feels like that, yeah.
That didn't quite work out. Is the city, are the people ready for this now?
Well, I think that you know, I can't speak to what exactly happened to Inspire, because it's structurally very good.
Oh, awesome,
you know?
Yeah.
I think that, first of all, they have Beverly, who has a hard-focused vision about what she wants this to be. She's on top of it. Kip Kelly, who does their programming, is full-time on this. And I don't see them letting it go at the Beverly. I think a lot of this has to do with your motivation and your vision and frankly, how connected you are in that community. And those guys are, especially Kip. He's really into it. So I believe in that. I think they're giving themselves every chance they can coming in to prepare for their programming. And you know, as Kip says, this is not about filling the room, you know, five nights a week. It might be, you know, whatever shows, a few shows a month. You know, but whatever we do is going to be done right, and it's going to remain active and remain in conversation, whether we have a, you know, nightly programming or not in the main room. I will say that that they've done everything right so far in preparing their programming strategy, and you know, in a way that I don't think a few other places have done it. You know, maybe it's more like a kind of a Huntridge in a different location. It might have that kind of feel too, with a little bit wider range. But you know, I'm following it, and I know that by the time November, December rolls around, we're going to be able to walk through it and see what they have planned. The renderings look terrific. The passion behind it is incredible. The heritage, Beverly, is all positive and all about doing good for this neighborhood.
I want to get to one more thing, John, and you only have 30 seconds to talk about the Heartland Mansion, torn down, disappeared. Oh, 30 seconds. What made it historic?
The famous parties that they had in there when the Hart family owned it. Tony Hart, the matriarch, and her sons, Larry and Gary, put on, they were an entertainment family. They did shows around town, and they invited all kinds of different celebrities to come in and hang out there. CeeLo Green did a video there. Gene Simmons of Kiss did a video there. The CeeLo's video had Muppets in it. It was almost like it had Muppets. It had an indoor Olympic sized pool, and it was like the Liberace Mansion vibe, but more accessible. And that was raised last week, and we don't know what's going
to
be.
And I'm sure
there.
This isn't true. I heard the TV show Heart to Heart was based on the owners of that.
Not true.
Okay. John, you know
that I know of.
You've noted and talked several times on this program about your singing ability, and I wonder if you could do it again. We've had you sing here, and I had a request from an avid listener. Kristen wrote that she hopes you'll sing I Wear My Sunglasses at Night.
Is Kristen an avid listener?
You have 10 seconds. Go.
I wear my sunglasses at night.
John Castellamitis, entertainment columnist for the Review Journal. John, I want to thank him.